As I was putting the finishing touches on this podcast, I put a little post up in my Facebook group saying, I have an interview with Carl Smith coming up. Who wants in? And already dozens and dozens of people have said, me, send it to me. And I want to read a comment from one person, from my friend, John Gill. He says, I took a course on kinetic shift with Carl in 2015. What a guy. Totally grateful for the learnings I received. Plus a kick up the arse. That's how Americans say it, in confidence. Looking forward to the podcast. During this podcast episode, Carl mentions that if you have three things, then you have everything you need to give your client during a session. If you can give them confidence, self-esteem, and a sense of purpose. And I believe that as you watch this interview with Carl Smith, you are going to feel all of those things welling up inside you and have a sense of purpose about getting your message out into the world and realizing that these tools empower you to let go of any limiting beliefs that you have from the past. I hope you absolutely enjoy this empowering interview from Carl Smith. He is one of my favorite teachers. I have been following him since the very beginning of my career, and I was so honored to have this conversation. You can find links to everything we talk about in the notes below the show. Enjoy this conversation with Carl Smith. By the way, if you know Carl Smith, then you won't be surprised to know that there is some strong language in this episode. This is not one to listen to while your kids are around. He was trying so hard to keep it G-rated until we got about halfway through and I said, oh, just let it loose, because I feel like it adds to his presence and his message, and it's just authentically Carl. I actually enjoy it. So enjoy this episode. Know that there's strong language. Don't listen with your kids, and have an absolute blast becoming inspired, building your own self-esteem, confidence, and sense of purpose. Welcome, Carl. I have been so excited to meet with you. I think you and I were going to connect a couple years ago when I was in the UK, and it never happened. And so I've been just super excited for this conversation. And I wonder if you would just tell the listeners, people who are tuning in, many of them, I'm sure, have heard of you and are familiar with your work. But for someone who is brand new to Carl Smith, will you just tell me a little bit about your journey and how you got to where you are today?
When I first ever used to do podcasts, it used to take me about 15 minutes to do this. So I'm going to condense it down to the real condensed version. Young lad from a holiday resort in the UK called Great Yarmouth, grew up, always wanted to join the military. So I went to join the military, spent 12 years in the British Army, went to all the places that your holiday representative won't send you to. I left the Army just due to the fact that I'd just had enough of what we were doing and, you know, and how things were going. And, you know, I did a lot of tours, but I decided to leave. I then joined the police. I actually left the Army, and it was a planned thing that I did. I left the Army on a Friday and joined the police on the Sunday. And I joined a civil police force, as in like your local coppers or bobbies or wherever you are in the world. I joined the police force and then went straight into firearms. Now, for those people in the US or Canada or anything like that, you have armed officers. In the UK, we only have about 10% of our officers armed. The rest of them, we give wooden sticks and ask them to sort the crap out after that. I joined firearms and then ended up on working on like a counter-terrorism team. So then I was on like the SWAT. So for those in England, UK firearms tactical teams, for US and anywhere else, I was on like what you call SWAT teams. So I was doing all that type of fancy stuff there. So I was enjoying my police career, and on August 4th, 2006, I was at home. I'd just finished duty. A drink driver that had been at a funeral decided to park his car in mine and my next door neighbour's front garden in front of the house. I ran outside. He reversed over me by accident, and then he left me in the road. But then he realised he'd done something really wrong, so he put it into first, and it was a stick shift. It was a geared car for those people that are not automatic. He stuck in the first and then hit me again and then dragged me all the way back home. So the only nice thing that he did that day was take me back home. Apparently, they reckon 90 yards. They found my clothes 90 yards. Between 60 and 90 yards, they found all my clothes anyway behind us, and then he dragged me all the way back. I went through counselling, absolutely terrible. Went through CBT, made it worse. Tried everything under the sun. And a friend of mine said he did hypnosis. And I'm coming back to the Great Yarmouth bit that I mentioned at the beginning. That's a seaside holiday resort. So the reason I mentioned I'm from Great Yarmouth is because it was a big holiday. It is a big holiday resort in the UK. And my only thing that I had on hypnosis was your Derren Browns, your Ken Websters, for those in England, for your Richard E. Barkers and all that lot, you know, all of our stage hypnotists. That's all I had, is that people making a fool of themselves. So this police officer educated me. He educated me on what hypnosis really is. And then what happened then is he helped me, and it helped pop what I now know to be post-trauma. He popped that in me, and it just continued pouring out over several hours. And then I went, what the bloody hell was that? I need to learn that. So I went away and I learned with us. And we'll come on to this later on, but I did do a 10-month useless diploma. But then I also went with a guy called Jonathan Chase, who a lot of people at HypnoThoughts and around the globe would know anyway. And I spent 2 days with Jonathan, and I learned more in 48 hours than I did with Jonathan than I did in a 10-month course. And it just became a drug until eventually I left the police force and became a full-time hypnotherapist, hypnotist. And, during my time and my time in the police force, I was working with lots and lots of police charities. I've been involved in lots of very, very serious events and stuff like that, involving firearms or death in custody or anything like that in the United Kingdom. And I learned my trade there. So I was able to work for a charity, give something back, and then literally get myself into a position where, hey, presto, Carlos is on the scene.
There is so much there that I want to unpack. And one of the first things that jumped out at me is you mentioned that you had done CBT and that it made it worse. And I've actually heard this a few times. You want to elaborate a little bit about why you think that is, or what your experience was like?
So what I want to do is I just want to make sure that I'm clear here, is that I am not, there are great hypnotists, there are great counsellors, there are great CBTs that do a good job. In my opinion, they're not as deep as what we as hypnotists, we know that we can do a very, very, we can have a high impact in a short space of time with an individual with hypnosis, because it's a direct line. CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, or as I like to call it, cognitive behavioral torture, just means that what you do is you just keep swimming around in your own crap until you desensitize it. And it really did make it worse. The best way that I explain CBT to people, and really, this is my personal opinion, if you're having CBT and it's working, brilliant. But the way that I explain CBT to people is like having a hot plate and then getting your hand, burning it. And then what you do is getting a therapist to keep getting you to burn it and burn it and burn it until eventually you're sitting there screaming out, and then you numb and take all the skin and the nerve endings off of your hand. That's probably the best way that I can explain CBT in a polite way.
I appreciate that metaphor. I actually fully agree with you. And I also agree that if someone is using CBT and it's effective, keep doing it. But yep. For me, I grew up in therapy. My parents divorced when I was 12, and I was in therapy for years and years and years. And that's what it felt like, is just touching that hot stove over and over and over.
Yeah. What can be achieved in 12 sessions in counseling or CBT, I can achieve in probably 12 minutes. And for those people who haven't seen my YouTube channel, go look, and then you can go have a look at it that way. But we'll discuss that at the end. But yeah, that's a very bold statement. But yeah, I could probably achieve more in 12 minutes than some counselors and CBTs can achieve in 12 sessions or 12 hours.
Yeah, I truly believe that's true. And I've seen you in work, and I fully underscore that comment. Carl, you mentioned that it was a police officer that led you through the transformation that brought you to study hypnosis. What was his training?
His training was all very much Ericksonian. So though, for those people who don't know, I'm a very, very Elmanian. I'm very close to Larry and Cheryl Elman, for those who don't know, the son of Dave Elman. I'm very Elmanian. He was very Ericksonian, very long and windy, winded statements, and leaving for ambiguity. But it did work. I will point that out. He did work. But his was through years of neuro-linguistic programming, lots of Ericksonian work, really, and fundamental hypnosis. So yeah, he'd had a bit of training prior to me turning up.
It's
The reason I ask is because I noticed so many people, after they've trained, they're afraid to start. But he was a police officer, not a practicing hypnotist, yes?
So he'd been doing it for some time. But okay. I think the confidence of being a police officer, being able to talk to people, I think that's where it aids me, is that being able to strike a conversation anywhere at any time also helps. But that's not to say that it's just the police officers do it. It's just something that we get trained in doing, to talk to people. So when I'm talking to my clients, I can strike up a bond very quickly. Some people call it rapport, some people call it, you know, you can call it whatever you want, really. But he was able to get me and educate me quite quickly. That's the key thing about this, about educating your clients quite quickly to then bring them in. Once you get that, that's it. But yeah, he was quite quick on that.
Would this be an appropriate place for you to elaborate a little bit about educating your client? Maybe give us an example of how you do that?
So,
or is that getting into your training?
No, I don't mind. So the quick way about this, if I'd have brought some things with me if I'd have known, but the way that I look at it is simple psychology. That's the way I look at it. Is that I talk about the left hemisphere, the right hemisphere. I talk about why we do what we do. I talk about the fight, flight, freeze mechanism, why that fires off. The way that if there's conflict between the emotion, the Kueism, Emil Kue. So if you don't know who Emil Kue is, Emil Kue told us that many years ago, if there's conflict between the emotion and the intellect, the emotion will always win. So that's a very key thing as well. So talking about why we do what we do. A lot of people as well, I've been teaching the lemon thing as well, where you can teach that conflict between the emotion and the intellect by getting them to hold a lemon. I don't tend to do that nowadays. I get them to hold something that they despise, something they don't like. Like maybe, I had one earlier today, it was tequila. Normally it's an alcohol based thing that people come out with, vodka or tequila. They've had a bad night on it, and if they smell it, they just get that. What I tend to do is that I show them their emotions are all figments of their imagination. Post-trauma is a figment of your imagination. Big statement, eh? But post-trauma is a figment of your imagination. Anxiety is a figment of your imagination. Stress is as well. We go through stressful periods, but what happens thereafter is figments of your imagination. So it's, for instance, Laurie, if I was to say to you now, give me a drink now, give me an alcoholic beverage that you've had that you just do not like anymore.
Tequila is one for me.
Tequila. So if I do this now, just what I want you to do is just put your hand up in front of you like so. Okay, just close your eyes. Just imagine, only imagine now that you've got a glass of tequila in your hand. Just bring that tequila underneath your nose now. Just smell that tequila. There you go. And if this is going on a podcast, for those who aren't watching this at the moment, or if you're not watching the video version, Laurie is currently screwing her face up. 3, 2, 1, just open your eyes. And for those people, what I want you to do now that are listening to this, I want you to do that. I want you to hold your hand up. Imagine that you're holding something that's, you can put that glass down now. Something that's absolutely disgusting that you don't like because of that very reason. And then I want you to pretend to eat it and watch what happens with the physiological side of your body. And then that's it. So when I've gone through this whole process of the left and the right hemisphere, the logical brain, the emotional brain, the conflict between them, the emotion, if there's conflict between your logical brain and your emotive brain, your emotion will always win. Proving what happened just there with that tequila, or anyone that's listening to this at the moment, about there is no tequila. There is no tequila at the moment. So your body is reacting to something that isn't real. And that's a simple way of looking at it. Your fears, your focus, post-trauma isn't real. I was remembering stuff, and I'm not going to go into, I don't want to go into vicarious stuff here. But there were certain times in my military that things happened that I wish I'd never, ever seen, and seen the worst of humanity. I've seen the worst of humanity. I can tell you that now. But when I, 10 years rolling on, 10 years on, when I had the car accident, my body felt like I was still there. It wasn't there. It was a figment of my imagination. And that's the way, you know, some people may want to go a little bit more scientific on that, but I'm trying to keep this simple, right, for people. Is that the gunman wasn't in the room, the person wasn't in the room, the dead body wasn't in the room, the incident, I wasn't in the incident, but my body acts the same way as that tequila or whatever you're doing now, that shying away, that don't bring it near me, and you get all of that, and that's the key thing there. So a really good way to really start this off is to educate your clients why you're doing what you're doing. A lot of people, Laurie, I don't even bother doing consultations. Another bold statement. I don't do consultations because this will help. This comes back onto why your podcast are doing it. Is that if the people listening to this now, remember, the issue is never the issue. The issue is never the issue. So when a client comes in and says it's anxiety, it's got nothing to do with anxiety. When a client comes in and says it's post-trauma, it's got nothing to do with post-trauma. When they come in and tell you weight loss, nothing to do with weight loss. Tell you biting nails, nothing to do with it. Smoking, nothing. I'm going to keep doing this all day because it's got nothing to do with the issue. The issue is more underlying than that. And my job is to get directly into that and find out why this is the presenting issue, not the actual issue. The issue is never the issue. Anyone in the therapy world will tell you now, who's got a pound, who's got, you know, just anything about them, who's seen enough clients, they will tell you the issue is never the issue. It never is. And that's where training sometimes lets people down. They're chasing ghosts. That's what they're doing. They're chasing ghosts. So a lot of people lose their confidence at the very beginning because they're chasing ghosts. They're not looking for they're not being an investigator. They're not investigating what's really going on. And you're going to make me go down the script route because I will hit the scripts. I will script back.
Well, I want to ask you because when I'm listening to you saying that, I'm trying to hear from the ears of my audience, and I feel like that might put pressure on them, like, oh, all this pressure to figure out what the issue is. And what I found is if I look at my client as if their unconscious mind has the key to unlock this for them, and I just have to figure out how to get to the answer inside them, it takes the pressure off me to find that. Tell me what you think about that.
So the key thing is the issue is never the issue. So when I put people into hypnosis, but by all means, this lesson, to save time for Laurie now, is that this lesson is on my YouTube channel. It's called The Emotional Detox, right? I'm not going to go into too much detail now. For those people who want to go watch it, I'm not asking for any money or anything like that. You'll see me do The Emotional Detox. What I tend to do is to get people in, is I use content-free hypnosis. So I put people into their hypnosis, not my hypnosis, test my work to make sure and ensure that I've got hypnosis. Then all I do then is I get them to get the client to let go of any negative images, feelings, thoughts, and emotions or sensations. Negative images, feelings, thoughts, emotions, or sensations that have held on to over the past few weeks, the past few months, the past few years, all the way back to when they were a little boy and a little girl. And then the bit of magic comes when actually I shut up. Now, that's interesting because what I do is I just sit back and calibrate consistently with the client, not saying a word. And all I do is I sit there and just say, you know, just once and every couple of minutes, when I look at the client, I think they've done something. I'm looking for physiological changes, emotive changes. I'm looking for all of those things there. And when I know that I finished that process, either by they've stopped shaking, they've stopped crying, they've stopped getting angry, whatever it is, when they've stopped, I tell them to open their eyes when they're ready. And then when they open their eyes, we have a bit of a check fire. Where did that just come from? It's my old military stuff, that is. We have a little bit of a check to see what goes on there. And then we put them back in. Let go of any negative images, feelings, thoughts, and emotions you've held on. And I continue that process because your brain is like a pressure cooker. And if you don't let go of the pressure, it will explode. Not literally. I don't want you to take that as a serious note, but you will. But your head, and I'm sure some of the listeners and viewers on this will understand, if they've ever been in a position where they're just like, I'm just going to hurt that person in a moment. That's when the pressure cooker, when people get really stressed out really quickly. If you look at it like a pressure cooker and look at it, all the things that have happened since you were a little child, or just one big pressure cooker, our job as hypnotists is to alleviate that. And when we do that with the emotional detox, letting go of all the issues, all the emotions, the feelings, the thoughts and images, and any sensations have held on to since a child, we relieve the pressure of the pressure cooker. That's the way I look at it. And do you know what? It works. And that's the beauty of this stuff is that being content free and being content free, it helps. And a lot of people struggle. I'm going to go down this road. I thought about this. I'm not going to do it. The reason that most people struggle is because they've got crap trainers. Their trainers taught them with what is commonly known as a barbaric system, a terrible system, and an outdated system for dead, for dying off psychotherapists. And that is scripts. Now, a lot of people are going to be sitting there now going, oh my God, you can't say that. I spent 2 years in college being taught how to write a script. Well, let's come back to this, right? The issue is never the issue. So if you're writing a script for an issue that your client presents, you're talking crap in your session. Do you understand what crap is over there? Yeah, you would do.
Oh, yes, we know crap.
Yeah, crap. You're talking crap because the issue is never the issue. The presenting issue is never the issue. So a lot of young therapists, a lot of new people coming through struggle because they've been let down by their trainers. That's why you find a certain clique of us, not because of egos, because if you want to talk about egos, driving fast cars, blowing doors off, that's ego. This is passion, what you hear now. I can sit there and talk. I've been in ego states before where I've hung off the side of buildings and done some really freaky stuff by blowing out windows, driving fast cars. Want to talk that all day? I'll do that. That's ego. This is passion about a profession that I love dearly. And those people that teach scripts, in my opinion, are failed psychotherapists trying to get a bit of margarine on a bit of bread, that last scraping of the margarine or the butter in the bottom of that container, and trying to get it over that bread as much as they can, as thinly as they can over the 10 months. And that's the way I see it. Because scripts will damage your confidence, not increase your confidence. Now, bullet points on a bit of paper, great. Full-blown scripts, crap. Full-blown crap. If you're talking in your sessions, there's one thing I want to give the newer members is if you're talking through your session, your client can't process. You've got to be able to get the client into the position. This is why that emotional detox on my YouTube channel, if people want to watch it, go watch it. You'll see me. I will shut up for 4, 5, 6, 7, even 10 minutes sometimes to allow them to process their stuff, not me try and force stuff in. That's where the confidence fail. That's where that. And my biggest thing about hypnosis training, and me and Mike Mandel sing off the same song sheet here, except I'm a little bit more expressive about it. Let's just say, is that, if the issue is never the issue, you're the younger people that are listening to this now, you've been fed a load of crap. I'll tell you that now. There are so many other words that I could call it at the moment, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to stay with crap because that's a nice low level one. But the key thing is that the reason that people's confidence is not is because they've been taught scripts. They haven't been taught properly. And you've got to come away from that because scripts do nothing. If you step away from that, put the person into hypnosis and just allow them to process, your confidence will increase no end. I will tell you that now.
I fully agree. And I feel like the reason a lot of people rely on those scripts is because they're not quite sure what the process is underneath the principles that are creating that change. And it also, my very first podcast guest was Stephen Blake, and I interviewed him because he responded to one of my emails and said, I think hypnotists are afraid because it seems too easy. And I think we feel like we're not doing anything, but when we can trust that it's the client that's doing it anyway, we can step away from that script and accept that it can be that easy.
I'll tell you now, I when I'm working, especially content free, is that when I'm working, I tend to uncover stuff that the client has not seen for years and years and years. And if we put it back to the analogy of the pressure cooker, if we look at that, where you're a pressure cooker, it's all those little things that have been stuck in the subconscious, unconscious monkey brain that have been stuck there all those years, blocking it all up, that have been causing all of these tequila moments to happen. The fight, flight, freeze mechanism. Fight, we verbally fight, or flight, we verbally fight, or physically fight. Flight, we run away from the scenario. Freeze, we curl into a ball. Your clients, if you ask your clients if they've ever heard of fight, flight, freeze, or say, have you ever fought your way out of something, run away from something, or froze and hoped it all curled away, then they'll get that. And you've got to start really working with the client in a basic format and getting them to understand that what they're doing isn't abnormal. They're just doing crap things really well. That's what they're doing. That's all they're doing. We all go through it. We all have depression. we all have depression, we all have anxiety, we all have stress, we all have tension, we all have that, right? We're humans. Anyone who says it, I reckon the Dalai Lama wakes up some days, right? And he's pretty peed off because his lentils are cold, right? He has a bad day sometimes, right? The Dalai Lama, I bet he does, right? But the thing is that we all have that. It's about how we are more resistant to it and how we recover from it. Depression is like that as well. We all have depression. There's no two ways about it. I sit here sometimes going like that, oh my God. But it's how my recovery rate from that is from there, you know. So people have been beaten all the way down. They just beat themselves up. Come back to a QAism, by the way. If you tell yourself something, you will become it. So an MLQAism, if you tell yourself something, you will become it. So if you tell yourself you're crap, guess what happens? If you tell yourself you're great, then guess what? You think you're great. I'm not going to go into politics at the moment, but there is somebody in America that just consistently tells himself he's great. But anyway, but the thing is that look what happens. He just breeds that. People like that breed it, don't they? And the negativity, those people that breed that negativity, they just do it there. It's about knowing when to, with depression, on how to stop it and showing people very quickly how they can stop it. You can stop depression really, really quickly. And there'll be people out there go, no, you need to give them 50 sessions. No, it's about responsibility, giving responsibility back to your client. That's the key thing.
Will you say a little more about that? Because this is something I'm really passionate about. When I learned hypnosis, it was to manage my weight. And the side effect was that it wiped out, obliterated a lifelong decades of depression. And it made me realize that you can, you know, put the most empowering thing about hypnosis, and the reason I became a hypnotist, is that I realized how easily you can guide a person out of depression. And yeah, I know this is really controversial, so I'll let you say it, and I'll just sit here and nod my head.
So what you're doing at the moment is pushing me under the bus. That's right. I've been under loads of them. And so the thing is that depression is about, if you tell yourself something, you become it. When a client comes to me and tells me they have depression or stuff like that, then I go, okay, so do you want it anymore? And it's that old thing about owning it, isn't it? I make them very clear that they don't have to own it now. It's just a big label. It's all it is, just a big label. The next thing is that what I do is I give them purpose. The key fundamental thing to a human being, they need purpose. So once I've cleared out all the negativity that they've been holding on to, I then drive them to a purpose. What do you want to achieve? Well, I don't know. I've always wanted to be a painter and decorator. I've always wanted to be a hypnotist. I've always wanted to walk up Mount Everest. I've always wanted to do this. So then what we do then is we look at achievable goals around that. But the key fundamental thing is that for those people who aren't aware of what I'm going to talk about now, these are the things you can go find out yourself, is that I teach them things like, A, great affirmations. That's good. If you tell yourself something, you become it. Get them to write down something. And I swear, Laurie, you're the first podcast, and Mike, Mr. Mindell's going to be really proud of me. I've not really sworn on this.
I noticed. I'm so impressed. You can.
Yeah, no, I'm not. All right, but if somebody says, I'm fucking awesome, right? I will get them to write that down and put it on their fridge. Now, that's not uncommon, right? But the key thing is that in my sessions, is I teach them EFT. So emotional freedom techniques or thought field therapy, so TFT, EFT, or any other tapping sequences. Another great one is havening as well. Mm-hmm. Havening is a great thing to teach people. So what I say to people is, because at the end of the day, I won't throw somebody out just after one session, especially with depression. I need to go check them, same as post-trauma. I'll go do some checks with them and stuff like that, and the following week or 2 weeks later, right? And I get them back and I say, okay, how'd you get on? And then they sit there and go, well, I feel like crap. I'm just as worse. Okay, how did you get on your homework? And they go, well, I didn't bother doing it. I'll tell you now, they just get a kicking straight off of me. And for anyone who's never seen me do a session, I am vicious. I am really vicious. People come to me because I am vicious. People love that. They like that. Sadistically, people like that. They like being sworn at, told they're everything under the sun, right? If you're looking for a unicorn stroker, I'm the opposite end, all right? So I am not a unicorn stroker. I don't sit there patting unicorns or chasing fairies at the end of the garden. If you believe in that and that's your thing, beautiful, right? Brilliant. I'm the other end of the scale. And And so I will give him a, I will give him a good chew, and I'll give him a bollocking all night long. But the key thing is that make my clients responsible for their own actions. Because when they come back and say, yeah, I've been doing that tapping and I've been doing the affirmations and I feel really good, then all I've got to do is amplify that state. That's all I've got to do. Make them more responsible for their own actions and give them a goal to go do something as well. That's the key thing.
That's brilliant. So I have two questions in the back of my mind, and I'll give them both to you, and you can choose which to answer first. You had mentioned your 10-month training and then your couple of days long training and the difference between the two. And I also know that people who are listening are going to be wanting to know more about your trainings and how you teach people and how they can access that. So if you would address that. Mm. And then the second thing is you had mentioned, and I'm forgetting what it is right now, so I'm going to come back to this and perhaps edit this out. So let's talk about the training.
You just think about that and I'll answer that first question.
Okay.
So about the 10-month, let me talk about the 10-month training. A lot of people get caught up with, my training was 450 hours. I've done 950 million hours. Quantity and quality are two different things.
Yeah.
Quantity and quality are two different things. Just because you've achieved 450 hours on a course does not make you a clinical hypnotherapist. I can make a clinical hypnotherapist in 3 days. Far more potent, far more effective than somebody who's been on a 10-month course. And that's the key thing here, is that people get really confused with this over quality, over quantity. So if you're telling me, I retrain people on a monthly basis, those that have been promised the known earth. Because each year, this number just increases and increases, where I've had over 1,000 hours of training and I call myself a clinical hypnotist. Okay, that's brilliant. Show me how to do glove anesthesia. We've been told that our insurance doesn't cover that. Why don't you just go away? And that's the point, is that being a hypnotist is nothing to do with badges, certification, or any of that. Do you know what it is? Confidence. I breed confidence in people. And come just saying, going on to that, what Laurie just said then, there is 180 videos, free videos on my YouTube channel, UK Hypnosis Academy. Just type it in and you'll find it. Go find any of those, and any of those are about instilling confidence in the student, not shit certificates. Because certificates are great, they're brilliant, we put them on the wall, great. I've been taught around the world, I've spent tens of thousands of pounds on myself, and I've only got one hypnosis, anyone who knows me knows this, who's been to my office, I've only got one hypnosis certificate on my wall. And that's the one that says, you're not allowed to practice. And somebody sent me a certificate saying you're not allowed to practice, because I carried out a rapid induction on a 10-month course, and they said that, we can't underwrite you because you do these rapid inductions. And that is the only one. And if anyone wants a picture of that, I will send it to you. I will say that is the only, anyone who knows me who's been to my office will have seen that. That is the only certificate in hypnosis I've got. The other one was EMDR. That's just stayed on the wall. And the other one is my fire walking instructor's ticket, the one where I do fire walking, glass walking, all that. They're the three, only three certificates I've got on my wall. Nobody ever looks at my certificates. Nobody's ever asked me for insurance. Never. The only people read that certificate and they still don't bloody understand. They go, oh, do you know why? Because it's about confidence. And that's a key thing that I want to get across to some of the younger members that are listening to this, is that start recording your sessions with the permission of other people, because it breeds confidence in yourself. And it also breeds confidence in those people searching for you. I'll tell you now, I've now got a 2-week backlog of clients. Why? Because of YouTube. Because I like to breed the confidence in people. I like it. And it's not, I'm not being arrogant anyway. And anyone ever watches me, they know what I'm like. I don't care. I go in and blow the doors off straight away. I've got no qualms in doing that. The point being is that confidence is key in a hypnotist, not certification. That's the key thing. The only thing I'm going to say, fail, 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 fail. I'm like Edison's light bulb. I've screwed up more times than anybody and come out at the back end of it. That's the key thing. I've made mistakes all of my career, especially in those first years where you're like, oh, but should I? I've just said it and not and. Oh my God. Don't worry about it. The client doesn't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care.
To me, this makes my whole podcast worth every episode that I've recorded. This is what I want people to hear. So rewind back and listen to what Carl just said and know that he is talking to you And if you have received a good training, I mean, I think even if a person has read Freddie Jacquin's book, you have everything that you need to get started. If you've engaged in Carl's training, you don't need one more certification. You don't need one more training. You're ready.
Do you know what is really key about being a good hypnotist?
What's that?
Confidence, but the confidence is spurned by being yourself. The amount of people that I listen to that go, Carl, you're recording your clients. And in England, we've got no accreditation or no governing bodies. They're mainly made up just to take the money off of kids and young people, right? There's none. That's my boot in the door anyway, arseholes. Anyway, but the thing is that there is no accreditation in England. But what happens is they put these boxes around people. Oh, you can't record a client because it's a client confidential. Well, ask the bloody client, can I record this session and put it up on my YouTube channel so that I can use it? That's all I do. And the key thing is about be you. I cannot express this enough. If you ever watch me work, and I've been really good on this, right, because I haven't sworn, I'm trying to be good, I'm trying to be a good boy. But the thing is that I'm telling you now, I will shock the crap out of most of you if you saw some of my sessions, because I do come out of the blocks and I'm very, very quick. I'm very effective in the way I do things. I know that. But on the same token, I'm me and I do it with passion. I do it because it's my personality. Once you realize confidence, personality and passion, you become your own. And I'm going to do it. Fuck your training off. Fuck it off at the high port. Get rid of it. Right. Do what they've told you. Embrace other trainers that are out there, the Jacquins, the Mike Mandels, the who else we got? There's people all over the world. I just can't even think about it. The King
Goose Trip, Melissa Tears.
Melissa Tears, especially for young ladies out there. Ines Simpson and Stephanie Conkle, she's doing really well at the moment for female hypnotists and stuff like that. People go out there and learn off of people. David Schneider, oh my God, we missed the big one off the building block. But David Schneider, David is him. I'm me. Mike Mandel's him. Mike watches me work sometimes. I'm like that. He's like that. What the bloody hell just happened there? But the thing is that it's because it's not about just prestige and showmanship. It's me. It's my personality. And I bring my personality into it. I'm not confined into a little box. And like I said, I don't even do consultations. Are you schizophrenic? Are you bipolar? Are you on any big drugs? No good. Sit down, shut up. Let's get on with it.
That reminds me of my second... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go on. That's exactly what my session is.
So my second question a moment ago was, for a person who watches you and sees how effective you are and looks at the way you work, because I've done this, I've tried to channel Carl Smith in my sessions and I'm crap at it. I'm more of the unicorn hugger. But I found that I can take the principles that you use, the kinesthetic shifts and the things that you do, and do them as Lori Hammond and equally effective. So if you would speak to that. And then the second thing is, when you say be yourself, I feel like sometimes people think, well, I'm timid, shy. Like for me, I'm an introvert and I was always the wallflower in school, but I found that I can harness confidence by changing my state and by stepping into the version of Lori Hammond that's most appropriate for that session. So could you speak to those things?
So the thing is that even though I've just told you about the way that I operate, you have to step into you. You know, and this is what I call them drones. People are being punched out of these colleges at the moment because they've hit that criteria, this curriculum, that curriculum, and they've done that. And yes, you've ticked a box, but you've not been taught hypnosis. And you have to come out of it and express yourself however you do it. Now, for those people that are sitting there going, oh my God, he's like a car crash. It's because that's my client base. They do not want Lori Hammond's approach.
Right.
They don't want your approach. They want Carl Smith, let's blow the doors off. So whatever where it comes from your heart, and this is where the passion comes from, is what drives that. That's what you've got to look at. That's where the driver is. That's where your passion will develop and your confidence will increase when you become the hypnotist you want to be, not the drone that somebody sent out. Yeah. Because they don't give a shit. I will tell you now, some of your training colleges may tell you that you've done 9,000 hours and you've completed 50,000 scripts, but they don't give a shit what happens straight after that course. They don't. They really don't give a shit. And you've got to be careful of that, because the percentage of people that pass courses to the percentage of people that go on to continue in the profession is lower than low. So you have to step into yourself. You have to be you. you just have to be congruent with the way that you want to work, not the way that somebody else wants you to work. I'm merely showing you the other end of the spectrum. I mean, Mike's completely different to me, but me and Mike are best mates. We sit around dinner and all that type of stuff. And, you know, David Schneider, and he's different to me. And Melissa Tears is completely different. She swears more than me, by the way, people you've never met. She's absolutely disgusting, the way she talks. Disgusting. Just absolutely. I love you really, Melissa. But the thing is that you have to be congruent with the way you want to be, not what somebody else. And if you want to do a hypnosis induction and add Reiki, spiritualism, and graphology into it, bloody well do it.
And you have all these videos up on your YouTube channel showing Carl Smith's flavor of hypnosis and building rapport. So the people who contact you know what they're in for. They already know, like, and trust you. Yeah. Whereas I'm the same. I have a lot of video. And so when people come to me, they know how I'm going to present myself, how I'm going to connect. Can you talk a little bit about getting over the fear of putting yourself on video and why video is so effective?
Very easy. Get over yourself. But it is. You know, at the end of the day, it's about just sticking a camera up and really screwing it up the first times. Nobody needs to worry about Hollywood. Don't worry about Hollywood, right? I've got a complete filming studio. Chris Thompson's got one. I know David Schneider's got one. I think Ken's got one. Jason Lynette, sorry, I missed Jason's name off of the list earlier. But like Jason, we've all got record studios. We've all developed our ways around it. But you can do just as much with an iPhone 10. Or an iPhone 11, stick it on a tripod and talk to it. What I will say to people is that people buy people. People buy people. So if you talk to a camera and get used to talking to the camera as though it's your best friend, then guess what? Your personality will come over. So when you watch my video, I spend a lot of time, for those people that are watching this on video, talking directly to the camera, which makes it more personable. That's the thing, people buy people. And once we've got that, people walk in my door, and for those people who have never seen me do my lessons before, it's all in the pre-talk. It's got the hypnosis induction is the last thing in the hypnosis procession. The hypnosis pre-talk is so fundamentally important. The pre-talk is the big thing where it all happens, getting that compliance. And like I mentioned earlier, left hemisphere, right hemisphere, fight, flight, freeze, the tequila moment, all of those things there, building the pre-talk. So what I get is I get that yes, sets foundation going, and it goes from there, right?
Will you talk to me a little bit more about confidence? Because I think so often people mistake arrogance for confidence, and I feel like they're almost completely opposite, where arrogance is almost trying to mask an insecurity, and maybe about how a person can develop their confidence if they feel like they're lacking.
Yeah, so confidence comes from failing. I'll tell you that now. Confidence comes from screwing up, consistently screwing up, and making the right pig's ear of it, because that's where you learn. That's why I'm so animated about scripts, because when people, if I just hold my iPad, when people are what, if you're my client and people are holding a script, they do this. And as you just go down the windy road and just allow that to happen, the confidence is damaged. That's where the confidence is damaged, because what happens is that you're not calibrating with the client. You're not doing what the client you're not actually watching what the client does. So that's where confidence is bred, by watching the client and calibrating with the client, watching the client and then making split second decisions on whatever technique you want to use this week. And like Melissa always says, this shit's all made up. So that's the key thing there, is that you've got to start building your confidence up with your client, not a sheet of paper. That's where it comes from.
Is there anything that you have burning that you want to convey that we haven't discussed yet, or anything that you would tell that person who thinks they need one more piece of office furniture or one more piece of lighting equipment before they start making video, or the right hypnosis chair? And before we move forward, I also want to ask you, you had mentioned testing. For a person who works over Zoom, can you give us some ideas about testing over Zoom?
Well, this is where it comes, because I all my work, my testing work, is done by visual representation. I don't do any hand drops, hand sticks, anything like that. I know when I have hypnosis. Why? Because I watch human beings. and I watch what people are up to, and that's where it comes from, being just intuitive, working from the gut. If there's anything that I would say to anyone working today, is start using your primal instinct of working from the gut. That's when it will come. That's when this magic, this shit starts piecing itself together. When you start watching somebody, when you start looking at them, and they're like, they're moving, they're twitching, and you'll go, that's it, let it go. That's it. Or as Mike says, that's right. Or you just do whatever you need to do, just to acknowledge that they're doing something, is when the confidence comes. When you work from your gut, your primal instinct, that's when it happens, not hidden behind an A4 sheet of paper. And if you are working with A4 sheets of paper, my advice is get them, take them to your backyard and incinerate them as hard as you can with as much aviation fuel as you really, really can.
Excellent. Do you have any tips for someone on how to develop that gut instinct? I would imagine as a police officer and being in the military that you really honed that instinct of watching people and learning cause and effect. And for me as an introvert, I picked up on that kind of instinctive where I don't really know why I'm picking up on it, but I've learned to trust that as well. If a person is listening and thinking, oh, I don't know how to listen to my gut, what would you say to that person?
You're talking too much. Mm. Not you, them. You're talking too much. Now, in this, you might find that a little bit odd, because Carl's done nothing but rabbit for the past 40 odd minutes. But that's my passion coming through. In a session, I'm very quiet. I allow them to do it. And by listening to your own subconscious, unconscious monkey brain, that's when it happens. If you're sitting there talking, you're a robot. You're not a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist. You've got to learn to shut up in a session, calibrate, listen to your gut. When you stop talking in a session is when that happens.
You mentioned affirmations earlier, and I really try to get people to tune into their self-talk. For me as a therapist, if I find myself thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do next, I can't help this person, I watch my self-talk and start saying, I can do this, I can notice this. And so I think when the therapist is being quiet and listening, their self-talk underneath can be, I can hear my gut. I can notice their signals. I can pick up on this. I know what to do next.
Yeah. And what you've got to listen at is, it's like being a composer of a band. It's like being a composer. It's like Roger Waters out of Pink Floyd. Roger Waters out of Pink Floyd left. And one of the things that I did listen to Dave Gilmore talk about one day, the lead guitarist for him, is that he may well have not been a really great musician, but the thing about Roger Waters about Pink Floyd was he knew when. That was what you need to be as a hypnotist. You've got to be the composer. You've got to be the person that goes, no. That's what you've got to learn. That's what happens when you shut up in a session.
And the only way you're going to learn that is by starting to get out there and actually work with clients. Use the tools and trust yourself.
Free presentations and failing. All I ever did was, when I was working for charities, was literally working for charities and working with people, doing the best I could for them. You know, when I first started, people said, oh, don't work for charities because you never get paid for it. Best place to go learn. Go work with these people because they'll be happy with whatever they receive. You get to learn people. Do you know what I mean? You get to learn that. And I had the privilege of working with charities and learning to work with people and coming away from that diabolical 10-month shit that I'd been taught, you know, to be able to express myself, to be me, to learn the hypnotist I wanted to be, not what box I'd been shoved into. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to be able to break that mold, get out there and be you. And it comes back to that. Be your own personality, have passion, and the confidence will breed from that.
Will you unpack the mindset and the self-talk and the underlying beliefs that enabled you to get out there and start doing presentations, even though you weren't sure it was going to work and you knew you would mess up? What kind of mindset equipped you to do that, just so the people listening can model those same mindsets for themselves?
I always wanted to be the best hypnotist. I always wanted to be, I went, when I had my accident and it unleashed this new you. Everybody that's now a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist, you've had something or have something on in your life at the moment that hypnosis changed your life. Mine was a little bit more dramatic than most, but you still have that. And that's where your niche is, or niche, as you guys say over there. Niche in England, niche over there, right? That's where your niche or your niche comes from, because that's where the passion lies. So people sit and go, they go, I'm going to go do the next weight loss course. I'm going to go do the next pain course. I'm going to go do this course. I'm going to do that course. I'm going to do this course. They're not following their passion. They're following the pound coins. They're following the dollar signs. They're not following, you know, reality. And that's if there's one thing I'm going to say to people now, be honest with yourself. If it was depression, anxiety, stress or strain, post-trauma, that's where your passion will lie, because that's where you're like, that's where you're at. That if you go back to the core fundamentals and take away the pound coins, or you take away the dollar signs, or you take away whatever it is, wherever country you are, once you take that one, strip it back to where you came into this profession, that's where it will start to come. I do nothing but post-trauma. I occasionally get a weight loss thing come in, but I'll be brutally honest, it bores the shit out of me. I can't be bothered with it. I'm fairly good at a good gastric band, but it bores the living shit out of me. Get me a complex, really complex CPTSD, CHDDDBDD, whatever it is this week, and I thrive on that stuff because that's where I came in. That's me.
My dog's ear is sticking up in the camera. I'm leaving it.
For those people listening, this has been a dog ceremony. I've got a Hungarian Vizsla, and he's next to me at the moment. Oh. And obviously, people could have heard him in the background. He's a lovely little fellow. And anyone who goes on my Facebook wall, you'll see Stanley there. But he's a you know the hound and the fox and the hound. That old that one there. That's it. That's what he is. So, but no, you know, pets are welcome. They're all welcome. You know, people come down this path for many wrong reasons. You know, and that's why I'm so passionate about this. I'm so, so passionate about it because it saved my life. It really did. It saved me from drugs and booze. And that's the key thing about this, is that I come from a place of passion. Some people call it arrogance. It's not ego. Sorry. It's not ego. Ego was a previous life. This is just love. I love this shit. I love it all day long. I'm always learning, trying to find out what we're up to, always networking, always doing stuff. And every day I eat, breathe, shit this stuff. That's all I do.
Yes, amazing. Do you have a few more minutes for me to hop down one more rabbit trail?
Go on, Em.
You mentioned that it has saved you from booze and drugs. I'm not sure, did you say drugs?
Yeah.
Will you elaborate a little bit on people who maybe want to approach addiction with hypnosis?
Well, you've always got a basic, come back down to two basic things. When people enter your room, there's only, when I said I don't do consultations, there's only two things that I look for and I'm going to be working with. Self-esteem and confidence. Why did they enter that rabbit hole? Why did they start this? Why did they start smoking? Why did they start the cannabis? Why did they start the cocaine? Self-esteem and confidence. They wanted to be part of a human pack. They want to be part of a tribe. That's human instinct, same as a dog's, right? Same as our dogs. They want to be on this show tonight because they want to be with us. They want to be next to us. It's a tribal thing. So addictions are the same thing. Alcohol as well is another same thing, because people don't just are not born alcohol. Well, no, I shouldn't say that out loud, really. People are not born alcoholics, are they? Unless there have been circumstances prior to in the pregnancy and stuff like that, or drug usage by the mother and all that type of stuff, right? That happens, right? But I'd say let's go for 90%. 90% of us are born barely healthy, all that type of stuff, no alcohol, a little bit of booze where dad's had too much and all that, like mum's had. But on the same token, we've got that, right? That's fine. We learn that process as we get older, because we want to be part of a tribe. When we're 13, 14, taking a bottle of Mad Dog 2020 or a bottle of Cinzano or a bottle of Jack Daniels, wherever you are in the world, and gulping it down in front of our friends because we want to get pissed, or nipping behind the bike sheds and having a quick smoke, they're things to be part of a clan. It's the same as other addictions, same as cocaine, when they're working in the office. You know, and I work in Docklands, I work in London quite a lot, working with people with coke addictions, because they want the extra edge. They want that extra edge. And how do they do it? Well, they want to be with the big team that are always on the money. They're always looking for the money. And that's the key thing there. It's about looking with anything that you deal with, not just addictions, self-esteem and confidence. As soon as they walk in the door, low self-esteem, low confidence, you've bagged that session already. Same as addictions. And then the process, how you get that person out of that, is entirely your strategy. It's entirely your strategy.
So building up that confidence and that self-esteem is going to replace what they've been getting out of the alcohol and wipe out that so-called addiction.
And giving them purpose, what have I said? Self-esteem, confidence, purpose. Give them a purpose. Give them the one, like this week, I had a close friend of mine whose mum died of sepsis due to alcohol. She'd been drinking and drinking and drinking. Husband worked on the oil rigs out at sea. Didn't see him for a long time. She just drunk the profits away and all that lot because she was bored. She was bored. That was what happened with this person. She was just technically bored. That's what happened. She drunk herself to death for boredom. When she could have actually chose another path. When she, this person who died, she could have chosen another path. She could have chose, well, I'm just going to make the most of it. If he's away, I'm just going to make the most of it. However, that learned behavior has then been passed on to her daughter, you see. And this week, I actually went in full blown, full lever on somebody and give them a damn good thrashing verbally. With what you need to do is you need to go write your children a goodbye letter now saying that you chose vodka over them. How's that? And she just sat there and broke down. So no, let's write the letter now. Let's do that letter now. Dear James, I'm really sorry that I chose vodka over you. And I know you probably want to tell me some final words when I'm dying on my deathbed. I won't be able to hear you, but just to let you know that I'll do the best I can. And we did that similar thing there. And oh my God, harsh. Some of you are probably sitting there going, whoa, sweet child. But that's what happened with her and her mother. She could not tell her mother those last few moments that she loved her, that she wanted her, because she chose the alcohol over her children. When the sepsis kicked in, bang, she was out into a coma, and their children couldn't do anything. And her children are my age. But on the same token, when I'm working with addictions, I give people purpose. And I gave her back this week the purpose of her children, to live for her children. And it's as simple as that, live for those loved ones. I mean, as a parent, I want to be gone before my children go, as any parent knows. I want to fall off my perch before they do.
I know people listening are going to want to know more about how to train with you. And if someone has gone on your YouTube channel and looked at those videos and listened to this, and they know that you are going to give them that piece that they need that they maybe missed in their 10-month training or their 9 million hours of training, what's the best way to move forward in that regard?
The easiest way for people to do is to go to my YouTube channel, which is UK Hypnosis Academy. So just go to the UK Hypnosis Academy and you'll find me there. Or you can just go to my website. And what you can do then is just go to the website. There's tons of material on there as well that you can go learn with and stuff like that. So UK Hypnosis Academy, you can find me there. And I can guarantee there's no... Oh, anyone who watches my last video, you'll see Stan in there and he's asleep. Unlike now, where he's wagging his tail. But the thing is that with my channel and stuff like that, I love to give people those little golden nuggets, really, where they can go out and really make a change. And I really, really hope that, you know, by watching that channel, it gives you like, there's, like I said, there's 180 videos of me working on this. So hopefully you'll find some golden nuggets in there anyway.
And don't just watch, take action, start using this stuff. Have confidence in yourself. And when you fail, tell yourself, I did it. Now I know what doesn't work and I'll do better next time.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You've just got to keep going. You've got to keep going at it. Keep going at it. Perseverance all the way through. Perseverance. Yeah. So all you've got to do, just keep persevering, and then you'll get a couple of lucky strikes and then you'll think, that's it. Then you'll take a knock. There's no two ways about it. Even me, I sit there sometimes and take a knock. That's fine. That's what I have to do. Just about not taking it personally. It's not my problem. It's theirs. I've done the best I can for that person. Tough shit if they can't be bothered to do what I need them to do.
I told you this was going to be awesome. I hope you have come away inspired, that your self-esteem, confidence, and sense of purpose have grown as you listened to this conversation from one of my favorite hypnotists in the whole world. Have an absolutely amazing day.